Yasodanandana Vrajajanaranjana Yasodanandana Vrajajanaranjana Jamuna Tera Banachari Jamuna Tera Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janabalava Giri Banadari Jasura Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tera Banachari Jamuna Tera Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janabalava Giri Banadari Yasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tera Banachari Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jai Nitya Lila Parivista Astatara Sita Sisi Manas Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Premsa Koho Sri Krishna Taitanya Pavanitananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhar Sri Vasiri Sri Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sunda Gopa Gopinath Shyam Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Govardhan Ki Jai Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Gaura Premanandi All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the Lord of Seed of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Karnapur, what's the verse number again? I'm sorry? 36, that's what I thought. Yeah, I had the wrong one here. Okay. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam today, third canto, chapter 24, text number 36. And today is also the celebration of Guru Purnima and the disappearance day of Sanatan Goswami. I do not have... give me just 1 second. Ah, there we go. All right. So there's a lot of material to cover today. I mean, I've done 4 classes in a row on Sanatan Goswami. So there's just too much material to speak about in one class. And what to speak of other topics. So I'm simply going to read the Sanskrit translation and purport to today's verse, just to try and grab myself a few extra minutes. So please excuse me for cutting corners. Etan me janma lokasmin mumukshunam durashayat prakshayanaya tatvanam samyatta atmadarshanam. Etat this, me, me, janma, birth, loke, in the world, asmin, in this, mumukshunam, by those great sages seeking liberation, that's all of us, durashayat, from unnecessary material desires, that's me, prashankanaya, for explaining, tatvanam, of the truth, samantaya, which is highly esteemed, atma darshane, in self-realization. Translation. My appearance in this world is especially to explain the philosophy of Sankhya, which is highly esteemed for self-realization by those desiring freedom from the entanglement of unnecessary material desires. Anybody interested in freedom from the unnecessary material desires? I guess not from the necessary material desires, if there are such a thing. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Here the word durashayat is very significant. Dur refers to trouble or dukkhi, miseries. Asayat means from the shelter. We condition souls. It's very rare to hear Prabhupada say that. We condition souls, referring to himself, because we know Prabhupada was not a conditioned soul. We conditioned souls have taken shelter of this material body, which is full of troubles and miseries. Foolish people cannot understand the situation and in this ignorance, illusion, or spell of Maya. This is called ignorance, illusion, or the spell of Maya. Human society should very seriously understand that the body itself is the source of all miserable life. Modern civilization is supposed to be making advancement in scientific knowledge. But what is this scientific knowledge? It is based on bodily comforts only, without knowledge that however comfortable one maintains the body is destructible. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, antavanta ime deha, these bodies are destined to be destroyed. Nitya yokshakta satrina refers to the living soul or the living spark within the body. The soul is eternal, but the body is not eternal. For our activities, we must have a body. Without a body, without sense organ, there is no activity. But people are not inquiring whether it is possible to have an eternal body. Actually, they aspire for an eternal body because even though they engage in sense enjoyment, that sense enjoyment is not eternal. They are therefore in want of something which they can enjoy eternally. And they do not understand how to attain that perfection. Sankhya philosophy, therefore, as stated herein by Kapila Dev, is Tatvanum. The Sankhya philosophy system is designed to afford understanding to the real truth. What is that real truth? The real truth is knowledge of how to get out of the material body, which is the source of all trouble. Lord Kapila's incarnation, or descent, is especially meant for this purpose. That is clearly stated here. Om Ajnana Tamadandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachanam Pangum Lam Jayati Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinitharini Sri Guru Paramananda Premananda Pralapada Bhajananamanan Daseva Mina Jaya Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaman Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pacharini Nivesesha Sunnivari Paskijadishnani. And how appropriate these verses that I recite are for today. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. I offer my obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the invincible Lord Sri Krishna. Simply by meditating upon his lotus feet, I have been able to study and appreciate this great literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. The observance of Guru Purnima is quite significant and, on one level, not so significant. It is significant because it gives the clear indication that the guru is required, that the guru is necessary, that the relationship, submission to, and guidance of a guru is essential. Now, Guru Purnima, Prabhupada politely but somewhat dismissed it as a generic worship of the guru, but he said we are personalists, therefore we look at the actual appearance day of the guru or the acharya. This is why Bhaktivinoda was mentioning and what we spoke about last week or the week before, how this observance of the appearance and disappearance days of the Vaishnava Acharyas is in our Vaishnava calendar for this purpose of observing these activities. There are many different types of gurus. quite often I'm referred to at Lowe's as the plumbing guru, which is rather appropriate for me. But people take this idea that, you know, someone who's a guru, they can, you know, give me some guidance, give me some direction. I don't know. This is their indication when they humorously say this to me at work, that I don't know anything about plumbing. You know everything about plumbing. Please give me some direction. So this very mundane, rudimentary understanding is exactly what the worship of the guru is about. We accept the fact that we're in ignorance. As Prabhupada said in the purport, quite humbly, we condition souls. We're all conditioned souls. And because we're conditioned souls, we cannot understand things properly. I mean, many of us had the experience of reading Bhagavad Gita before we came in contact with Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita and really not understanding five words out of it. My introduction to the Bhagavad Gita was through Ram Dass, who shaded his introduction to the, shaded his explanation of the Bhagavad Gita with his strong affinity for LSD. So therefore, we can understand that the instruction of Bhagavad Gita was a little bit tainted, wasn't so clear. So this is the necessity for the spiritual master. Now, in the sense of accepting on a wholesale level the spiritual master, it's interesting on Sanatana Goswami's disappearance day, it's also referred to as Murya Puna. And this indicates the full moon in which everyone shaves the head. Sanatana Goswami was not an aloof, unconnected to Vrindavan and the Brajbasis type of person. It is the common practice that the Goswamis, all the Goswamis in our line, would practice either exclusively or at some point in their residency in Vrindavan, the Madhukari, going door to door and begging, Ma, you have some roti? You have some chapati? You have some sabji? Whatever. And Sanatana Goswami would not only do this, but he would do it so often, he became very familiar with the different families. So while he's begging and then waiting for something to come, so how are the children doing? You had a good crop return this year? Oh, no. Did you try such a... Sanatana Goswami actually knew some details about crop growing, and you know, harvesting. Did you try such and such? You can adjust like that. That'll give you a better yield. You know, so we wouldn't think Sanatana Goswami has a conversation with the Madhukaris that he visits on how to produce better greater yield of crops, or asking about their daughter's marriage and your son's education, all is good. I mean, common stuff like this. Even to the point it's noted that he would sometimes resolve squabbles between the husband and wife, you know. So Sanatana Goswami was experiencing all these things, A, because of his previous life as a minister, but B, because he was concerned about the Braj Basis on a personal level. So because of this, he was like a family member. Therefore, when he departed this world, every male in Vrindavan shaved their head as if their father had just passed away. This is the common practice. When the father departs, the sons shave their heads. And every single man in Vrindavan did this. And to this day, and not only they had the face too, complete. And to this day, this practice still is done. And then when this was done and he had departed, the Brajabasis, particularly Govardhan Basis, they took him on Govardhan Prakram, took his body on Govardhan Prakram. Prabhupada had a desire to do this near the end of his life, and it was very much argued against it because of the disturbance to his life affairs it would have caused in his particular stage. But after Sanatana had disappeared, this is what the Brajabasis did. So, you know, in this way, he had a very strong influence in the life of the Brajabasis and in his life in Vrindavan proper. Now, his father, Sri Kumar Dev, had more than one son. He had the three sons that we know of, Rupa, Sanatana, and Anupam, or Ballabha. And they were all great Mahabhagavata devotees of the Lord, highly advanced, highly advanced. And the only heir, we could say, was Ballabha's son, Jiva. So now you've got three of these Goswamis, or six Goswamis, that are closely related. And yet that family relationship was not an impediment. We don't see that Rupa and Sanatana being brothers and Jiva being the nephew impeded their relationship in the execution of devotional service. Therefore, oh, I have to give up all family life. I have to go and live in the forest. No, it's not necessary. You know, you may do all that. Doesn't mean you have to disacknowledge your family members. Now, we all know, as was just mentioned earlier, that the Shah of the area at that time, Bengal, he was very prone to engage the Vaishnavas in his service. He wasn't a fool. He could see these Vaishnavas, they're incredibly intelligent, very, very good at management. Some of them are expert at overseeing finances. So he forced many different Vaishnavas, not just Rupa and Sanatana, many different Vaishnavas into his service. Keshava Vasu Khan, he was the police commissioner for all of Bengal. Gopinath Vasu and Purandar Khan, they were both prime ministers also. Mukunda Kaviraj was his personal doctor. These are all associates of Mahaprabhu. Keshava Chatri was the royal diplomat or the counsel to the king. Sanatana, of course, Shakir Malik, as he was called, was the private secretary. And Rupa Dabir Kash was the revenue officer. And Sri Ballabha was in charge of the royal mint. These are not minor jobs. Even in our modern so-called democratic society that we live in here in the U.S., these kind of positions, they have to be presented and then approved, and then a committee interviews them, and, you know, it's a very significant position. The Shah understood how valuable these devotees were, and he was not miserly in his stipend for them, in his salary. They lived a very comfortable life, very, very well taken care of. Now, the thing is, there was one small fly in the sweet rice, and that was that the Shah was a Muslim, and the Muslim habits, which are not exactly the same as our Vedic tradition. And in the Vedic tradition at that time particularly, if one associated with Muslims, they had to perform different purificatory rites. Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami never bothered with this. They just accepted, okay, we're in this boat. They made their appearance like that, and they just went on with their life. Their father, Kumardev, did copious amounts of purificatory pujas to elevate his sons, to keep them from the result of that. So we of course know that Rupa and Sanatan, Dabirkas and Shakir Malik at the time, they had their headquarters there in Ramkeli, and that with the wealth that they received, they turned Ramkeli into a second Vrindavan. Radhakund, Shamkund were there, Govindakund was put there, Govardhan was put there, similar to what we see being done in the Echo Village in south of Mumbai these days by Radhanaswami and his crew. So this was very, very important, and Ramkeli as a result became a very prominent place for study. Brahmanas and pundits and all kinds of learned scholars would come, and they would serve Rupa and Sanatan there. They would study there. So much was going on. The two of them were considered to be the crest jewels of the Vaishnava community. They did everything they could to foster a Krishna conscious mood there. Now, it is necessary to give a little bit further explanation to this dream of Sanatan Goswami's. He was still quite young. He was living at home with his mother and father and family. And he had a dream. And in this dream, he saw one very nice Brahmin, very effulgent. And that Brahmin called him forth and handed him the Srimad Bhagavatam. To this point, Santosh, Shakir Malik, Sanatan Goswami will go with that. He had not had contact with the Bhagavatam. In the dream, when he received the Bhagavatam, all of his hair stood up on end, and other symptoms of ecstasy manifested within his body. And then the dream broke from the manifestation of these ecstatic symptoms. And he looked around. There was no Brahmin. There was no Bhagavatam. And he was very, very depressed. Very, very, very depressed. So, you know, he got up the next morning. He bathed. And he decided, I will wait for this Brahmin. So he sat down in front of the house, side of the road, maybe on the veranda. It's not very clear like that. And he waited. Did some japa, did some prayers. And soon, sure enough, one effulgent brahmana came walking down the road. The brahmin came directly over to him, sitting on the veranda, as it were, which in itself was uncommon, because generally when you go to someone's home that you don't know, you address them from a distance, ask permission to come in. You don't usually just walk right in. Unless, you know, they're very dear and close friends and you simply open the door and holler and then walk in. But generally, but the Brahmin walked directly up to Sanatan and he said, here. And he handed him the Bhagavatam. He said, take this Bhagavata. Always study it. And by such study, perfection will become yours. So he gave him the Bhagavatam. Sanatan looked down at the Bhagavatam, just in ecstasy, and he looked back up, and the Brahmin was gone. So from that day forth, Sanatan simply studied the Bhagavatam exclusively. It says in the biographies that he left all other scriptures aside simply to study the Bhagavatam. And then, of course, these verses that I mentioned at the beginning of each of my classes, dedicating himself to the Bhagavatam. Now, it's interesting because when he, and I'm going to be jumping around here a bit, so I apologize for a lack of continuity on some of these subjects, but they're all about Sanatan. So when he and his brother were engaged in the service of the Shah and they solicited Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come and visit them, and Mahaprabhu came to Ramkeli and instructed them, you have to give up this government business. And we know Rupa was able to quickly extradite himself. And in that process, he left 10,000 gold coins. Important point, this is what he left behind. 10,000 gold coins. I think I have one gold coin. I've got it somewhere in a special place. I'm so special, I can't remember where it is. But at any rate, this was what he was setting aside for emergencies for his brother, and he was able to, as we would say, get out of Dodge. So he left. Now, Sanatan tried to continue, but he just, his heart wasn't in it. His brother was gone, and his instruction was there from Mahaprabhu. And so who wants to, you know? So he deployed an age-old process that even is followed today. He called in sick to work, but he wasn't really sick. And that part's also followed even today. I'm sorry, boss. I can't make it in today. So, you know, we if we get challenged on this point, I'm sorry. I'm simply following the footsteps of Sanatan Goswami. So he was out of work for several days. Several days. And the Shah became quite concerned. He called Mukunda Kaviraj. You remember Mukunda Kaviraj was his personal doctor. Mukunda, go to Sanatan and see what you can do to help him. Something's wrong. He's not doing very well. He hasn't come to work for 5-6 days. So Mukunda went and he saw, oh, Sanatan's in perfect health. Matter of fact, he's sitting with, so he came back to the king and he said, there's nothing wrong with Sanatan. What do you mean there's nothing wrong? He's sitting with so many pundits, so many brahmanas, and they're discussing Bhagavatam all day, just studying. He said, oh, really? So the king himself went. He said, Sanatan, you're acting like this. You can't, you know, your brother Rupa has left, your brother Dabhyakash, he has left. I can't manage the kingdom by myself. Neither do I want to. I have other things I want to do. And you have to come and do this. You know, you've got to take up the responsibility. And he specifically said, my intention is to go to Orissa and conquer the Orissan state. So you have to run the kingdom while I'm gone so this can be done. Sanatan told him, he said, if you go to Orissa, you will simply cause so much trouble to the deities and to the Brahmins there, particularly to Lord Jagannath. I know your intention. So I will not be able to assist you. If you do not, I will give you great difficulty. You do what you must do. You're the king. How did he say it? I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself here. At any rate, he said to him, he said, you know, you're the king. You do whatever you have to do, but I will not be able to assist you. So he was put into a jail. Now, it wasn't a jail cell like a 4x6 cell. It was actually a small stone building, maybe the perimeter about the center of this temple room. And, I'll just say it. I have a piece of the wall from the jail cell that he was in my collection of memorabilia and stuff. It was given to me by one devotee that went there. So he was imprisoned there. And the jailer, now this is an interesting aspect of this. The jailer, the royal jailer, was the jailer only because Sanatan Goswami had hired him. He had his job because of Sanatan Goswami. So Sanatan Goswami said to him, my dear sir, you please just let me go. Oh, I cannot do that. The Shah will have my head. Need I remind you that the reason you have the job is because of me? And the jailer said, yes, but if I free you, then myself and my family will all suffer greatly at the hands of the Shah. He said, not a problem. He said, you tell him I had to adjust the call of nature, and you took me to the river, and when I went to wash in the river, I jumped in and drowned. He said, I don't know about this. I don't know if I can do this. So now you have to remember there's 10,000 gold coins stashed for Sunanta to use. So he says to the man, you know, first he tries to encourage him on the basis of friendship. Then he's trying to be a little diplomatically devious. Then he says to him, he says, I want you to know that you will not be found out, because once you free me, I'm going to go to Mecca and become a Sufi. Now, if you are or are not familiar, the Sufis are the, Madhumati put it this morning, the Upasampradaya of the Muslims, because they're filled with bhakti, they're completely into the name of the Lord, they're completely into this higher level, and so, you know, they're very much respected in that sense, but not so much in the greater Muslim community. But they are, you know, great mystics even. They do all kinds of things. So he says to him, I'm going to go and become a Sufi. You won't have to worry about anything. So the jailer's hesitating, so Sunanta Goswami sends to the grocer, who's serving as the banker under Rupa Goswami's instruction, and he brings 7,000 of the gold coins, and he puts them in front of the jailer. Now, you know, 7,000 gold coins, that's like winning the lottery, as Dhruva Maharaj said. Dhruva was saying to me this morning, he said, I wonder what happened to that jailer after that incident. Because, you know, the first thing anybody does when they win the lottery is they quit their day job. So we don't even know the jailer's name. I'm sure somewhere it is. But, you know, at any rate, so he agrees, okay, I'll let you go. And Sanatan departs there. Now, we know the rest of it. Sanatan meets with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and for 2 months takes direct instruction from him. That subject alone, which is covered very elaborately in the Madhya Lila, the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Srila Prabhupada, could be an entire seminar. You know, we're doing so many seminars these days, they're a big thing. Somebody should do a seminar on the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatan Goswami. So, you know, very, very detailed. And in this way, you know, he had these instructions that were very pertinent to him. Mahaprabhu made sure that he understood. So he then continued on and he went to Vrindavan. Now, many, many different pastimes happened in Vrindavan. I'm jumping ahead just a little bit here, if you'll bear with me. One important point, when he did meet Mahaprabhu, he had, you know, he had been traveling for some time. And, you know, when you're traveling in a situation, sleeping under a different tree or in a cow shed or whatever every night, taking care of certain appearances is not such an important thing. And so he had quite a scraggly beard and dreadlock kind of hair. You know, it was all matted and ugly. And so when Mahaprabhu saw him, he indicated, you know, they should go. Prabhupada did that to a few of the disciples that were growing hairs, as Prabhupada said. He indicated that has to go. So Sanatan did like that. Mahaprabhu was very, very happy with him, gave him a big embrace. Now, he goes to Vrindavan. He's in Braj. Jagannanda Pandit went with him. He left from Puri, met Mahaprabhu in Puri after Benares. And so Jagannanda Pandit, of course, as we know, is an incarnation of Satyabhama and an excellent cook. He would cook for Mahaprabhu, not that Mahaprabhu would eat everything. It's actually funny, in some of the Puri pastimes, Mahaprabhu would say, no, if Jagannanda's made it, I have to eat it, otherwise he'll become angry with me, you know. He'll argue with me, and then he won't talk to me for days, you know. In Vrindavan, Jagannanda Pandit invited Sanatan Goswami to come for lunch one day. Now, Sanatan Goswami had been given one piece of cloth from some sannyasi as a gift. And it was not a saffrony. It was a bright orange, like, you know, some of these effulgent, bright orange cloths we see in Vrindavan. So at any rate, when Sanatana Goswami came, he had taken that cloth and wrapped it around his head, somewhat like a turban, but not quite so elaborately, just kind of, you see in Vrindavan, Govinda Swami is very expert at this, taking the cheddar and with two or three wraps, there it is, it covers the whole head and just kind of hangs on the side, you know. So, like this, so he came to Jagadananda, and Jagadananda invited him to eat and said, oh, very nice cloth. This must be Mahaprasad from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, oh, no, this was given to me by Mukunda Saraswati. Jagadananda said, you've taken a cloth from another. He picked up the pot of rice and was about to throw it at Sanatana Goswami. Jagadananda was known for being a little hot-tempered, you know, and he was about to throw this pot of rice at him. And Sanatana Goswami, he chuckled and he took the cloth off. He said, that's all right, Jagadananda. He said, I wore this simply to see this reaction. And Jagadananda said, how can you wear a cloth that's not from Sri Chaitanya? You're one of his most intimate associates. How could you even tolerate to have such a cloth on you? And he addressed him. He said, Pandit Mahasaya. He said, it is clear that you are unequaled in your love for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Only from you could I learn this lesson, for you alone have such solid faith in the Lord. My purpose in binding this cloth around my head has been realized, for as soon as you saw it, I was able to witness the manifestation of your love for the Lord. A Vaishnava should not wear such a red, orange-colored cloth. I will give it to someone else because now I have no further need for it. So in this way, Sanatana Goswami was expert in pulling out that mood of love that Jagadananda had for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Eventually Jagadananda Pandit could not bear the separation of Mahaprabhu and returned to Jagannath Puri, at which point Sanatan gave him some gifts to give to Mahaprabhu. One was a bit of sand, of the soil from where the rasa dance had taken place. He sent a Govardhan Shila. He sent a necklace of gunja berries, and he sent some dried pilu fruits. Now, when Jagadananda arrived, he delivered these things to Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu delivered the pilu fruits to his devotees. Now, not all the devotees of Mahaprabhu were Bengalis. The Bengalis knew, oh, the pilu fruit, you don't eat the seed. The seed is spiky hot. It's just not a very pleasant taste. So the Bengali devotees knew to eat the fruit and then spit that seed part out, but some of the other devotees didn't, and they began to chew on the seed and the burning. So this was a source of great humor. While Sanatana Goswami was staying in Vrindavan, he was doing this Madhukari and, you know, living very simply and writing his books and all like that. And he had one kutir. It was made from leaves and branches, very simple, not even like some of the thatched ones you see there now. So one day he was walking along the banks of the Jamuna and he was getting ready to go to one of the Braj villages and do his Madhukari. And Madan Gopal Dev was playing there with some other cowherd boys. And when he saw Sanatan, he came running forward to him. And he called out to him, oh, Baba, Baba. Now, just those three or four sentences, you can unpack into some very interesting points. Madan Gopal was playing with some cowherd boys. It was actually the family that he was being cared for by, but that family cared for him just like one of their own children. And so he manifested in that way for them. And so, you know, here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifesting in his cowherd boy form. He sees Sanatan, and Sanatan doesn't recognize him as the personality of Godhead because, of course, you know, the Brajabasis, they don't look at the Lord like that. They look at him as their dear boy, Kanai. You know? So he came forward to Sanatan. He addressed him very, you know, friendly, like, Baba, Baba. And he took him by the hand. He said, I want to go home with you. Sanatan looked at him, and he was a little incredulous. He said, Lala, little boy. He said, why do you want to go home with me? He said, oh, I want to stay where you live. Now, let me ask you. Your mother is feeding you every day? Yes, yes. So if you come and stay with me, what will you eat? Oh, Baba, I will eat whatever you eat. Do you know what I eat? I eat a few dried roti and some boiled chickpea. You'll eat that every day? Yes, yes, if that's what you eat, then that's what I will eat. No, 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 you're a young boy. This will not be enough for you. You need nourishment. You stay with your mother and father. No, no, Baba, I want to go with you. Now, I'm telling you, you go back and stay with your mother and father. And Sanatan left. We have to understand that these pastimes are there with the intimate pure devotees of the Lord who are there with him from Leela to Leela to Leela. They're not for us to think we're a part of or to try and imitate. So Sanatan Goswami, you know, continued on his begging like that and went back to his bhajan kutir and took his little bit of rest, a couple of hours a night. And in that short time, he had a dream. And that boy, that same boy, came to him again in the dream. And he caught him by the hand and he said, Baba, tomorrow I'm coming to stay with you. My name is Madan Gopal. And then the dream ended. And Sanatana Goswami woke and he thought, oh my goodness, what did I see? I saw this wonderful, beautiful boy. And thinking of the Lord in this way, he opened the door to go outside. And there, just in front of his doorway, was the deity of Madan Gopal. Fulgent, illuminating all directions. It wasn't quite sunrise yet, but everything was illuminated by him. And Sanatana Goswami was just completely captured by the radiant smile. And he expected the deity was going to say something to him or maybe, you know, walk closer to him or something. But nothing like that happened. He had assumed the deity form. I mean, we understand Shamsundar is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but I don't believe any of us are on the platform. We expect him to step up to the edge of the altar and give us a sweet or a banana or whatever. You know, it doesn't work that way. So Sanatana Goswami fell to the ground. He offered obeisances. He went and took his bath, and then he arranged for the full abhishek and offered some puja and some different foodstuffs that he could muster together. Of course, news spread very quickly. Braj is a village, and Rupa immediately came to see. So Sanatana, of course, kept the deity with him. There's a few different ways this story is told how the deity came, but this is one particular version. And so he stayed with him, and he would keep him in a tree. We know this part of the story. And, you know, every day he would make his... the description is given dry roti, but it's much more basic than that. He would take some flour, he would take some Jamuna water, mix the two together, make a ball, throw it in the fire, let the coals cook it, then he would pull it out, offer it, and eat it. So, I mean, we're not even talking like rolled out chapatis necessarily. So he's offering like this to Gopal, you know, because the devotee, nothing they eat is not offered first to the Lord. So in this way, he would make this offering. And so one day, Gopal said to him, Sanatanji, could I have a little bit of salt? I mean, you're not even putting salt in this, just a little bit of salt. Sanatan looked at him, he said, salt? You want salt? When you came, I told you this is what I eat. You said this is what you would eat. Here again, these types of conversations between the Lord and his devotee is something for us to read and understand about, but highly beyond our level. And he said, you know, when you were staying with this family, you know, they were worshiping you in one particular way and you accepted that. And so now you come with me and I'm worshiping you in this way. You ought to accept that. He said, well, but I'm not going to eat unless you bring me some salt. Salt. And then tomorrow you'll ask me for ghee. And then the next day you'll want some sabji to go with the roti that's got ghee and salt on it. And soon I'll be spending all of my time serving you meals and not getting any of my service to Mahaprabhu done. So in this way, you know, he felt quite bad about not being able to offer more than that, but this was his circumstance, you know. So at any rate, shortly thereafter, one very wealthy businessman, some say Kshatriya, some say Vaishya, but at any rate, his name was Krishnadas Kapoor. And he came to Mathura to do some transactions. That's why many people think he was definitely a Vaishya. So at any rate, came to Vrindavan to do some transactions, some trades, some business like this. And in that process, his boat became stuck on a sandbar in the Jamuna. And try as he might, even with all the men on his boat, he couldn't get the boat free. So he went to some of the residents on the bank. They said, what do we do? What do I do? How do I get this in? They said, you go to Sanatan Goswami. He lives up there on this hill overlooking the Jamuna, and he'll take care of you. So he went, and he prayed to Sanatan. He said, you know, you've got to give me your mercy, please. I've got this boat full of goods, and, you know, I need to get it free so that I can get it to market and make some benefit. And now, Sanatan's simply wearing some copan and maybe a little piece of cloth as a chadar and sitting there very thin and lean. We don't often think about the fact that the austerities that the Goswamis performed impacted their physical appearance. You know, we have to keep that in mind. They still had a physical body, spiritual body, however you want to look at it, but their activities impacted the well-being of that body. So very skinny and thin, and he says, oh, what can I do? I'm simply a beggar. How can I give you any mercy? No, I need your blessings. My boat's stuck, and I need to get it free by any means. Well, I'm completely ignorant about the matters of boats and water levels and things of this nature, which, of course, he wasn't. He said, you go and you talk to Madan Gopal, see what he can do for you. So he went to him and he prayed to the deity. He said, my dear Lord, he said, if you free my boat, then I promise you that whatever funds I get from it, however much money I get, I will construct a temple for you. So rains came, boat lifted up off the sandbar. He was able to go to market, trade all of his goods, make a very good profit. He came back to Sanatana Goswami, okay. Just as Sanatana Goswami had put the 7,000 gold coins, some say 5,000, but anyway, the gold coins in front of the jailer. Then in the same way, this Kapoor put the benefits of his business deals to Sanatana and said, so you build a temple for Madan Gopal. So that's the temple that we see there in Vrindavan still to this day. Kitchen, temple, everything was, you know, made and done there like that. The instructions that Mahaprabhu gave to Sanatana Goswami can be boiled down to four particular points. He gave him four specific responsibilities. One was to preach pure devotional service by establishing the doctrines of that pure devotion. Two, to discover and make known the various places where Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes took place. Three, to establish the service of the deity to Krishna in Vrindavan, as it has previously been. And four, to establish proper Vaishnava behavior through compiling a Vaishnava rule book. So these are the four things that Sanatana Goswami held in his heart and kept very dear to him. As the Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Mahaprabhu said to him, O Sanatan, you should broadcast the revealed scriptures on devotional service, excavate the lost places of pilgrimage in the district of Mathura, establish the deity worship of Vrindavan again, and compile a scripture containing the rules of devotional practice and preach these practices. So it's very important for us to realize that these books that were written by Sanatana Goswami are essential for us to be at least aware of if we don't have the opportunity to read them. In different places, Prabhupada indicates different books that should be read. Hari Bhakti Vilas is probably one of his most famous, maybe close competition with Brihad Bhagavatamrita, two entirely different subject matters. At any rate, so Sanatana Goswami was, spent quite some time in this way. And You know, he at one point he had been given a Chintamani stone. And of course, what does a Goswami need with a Chintamani stone? Now, of course, nowadays we may take that, okay, enough money to buy a new temple, enough money to pay off the mortgage, enough money to spread Krishna consciousness, enough money for thousands of books to be printed, no cost, you know, like that. But Sanatana Goswami couldn't be bothered with it. Now, there was one man, I can't remember his name now, I've lost it. I had it up here. At any rate, he had heard that this Baba, this Swami, this nunciate, lives at the top of Dodasa, and he has great wealth. So he thought, okay, I'm living very poorly. My wife is always telling me, why can't we have more income? I'm doing what I can. You know, I'm not able to provide nicely for the family. So I'll go to this Goswami and I'll ask him. So he made the trek up there and he went to Sanatana and he said, you know, offered his respects. He said, you have some great wealth, I'm told. So he said, wealth? I don't know of any wealth I have. No, please. I know you're keeping. I'm told you have a Chintamani stone. Chintamani stone. Oh, that. Yes. I have such a thing. I'd like to have that from you. Oh, you want it? Yes, you can take it. I don't care. Man was a little surprised. Oh, Chintamani stone. Where is it? Oh, it's over there in the rubbish pile. So the man thought, oh, this is a good place to hide it. Nobody would think to look in the rubbish pile. So he went in and he said, oh, thank you, Baba, thank you. And he proceeded to head back to his home and he got a little bit down the hill and he thought, wait a minute. If he's got a Chintamani stone and he's keeping it in the trash, he has something much more valuable. So he went back and he approached him again. Sanatana said, oh, you've come back? Yes. I'm thinking, you've given me this so easily. You have something more valuable than this. And a very slight little smile played across Sanatana's lips. He said, yes, that's true. You'll give me that? Yes, if you want it. Okay, I do. But to get the more valuable thing I have, you have to throw this into the Jamuna. So the man's looking at the Chintamani stone. The Jamuna was not so far away from Sanatana's ashram at that time. It's not like it is today. Some doesn't. So, all right. Now sit down and repeat after me. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And the man did become quite a good devotee. After some time of staying in Vrindavan and doing Madhukari, Sanatana Goswami decided he wanted to go to Govardhan and stay at Govardhan. And so the place he stayed was Chakratirtha. Chakratirtha is where when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, we see the paintings of all the rain, but we don't see any destruction. That's because Sudarshan Chakra came and first, Vasuki, the celestial serpent, surrounded the bottom of Govardhan Hill as Krishna held it up and kept all the water there. Little bits would drip off to the side. And then secondly, Sudarshan Chakra came and whoosh, through his heat, evaporated all the water. So after this Govardhan Lila was finished, Sudarshan Chakra didn't want to go anywhere. So he was given this Chakratirtha place. It's right near Manasi Ganga. So you can stay here. So Sanatana Goswami wanted to stay at this place. It's on the banks of Manasi Ganga. So many wonderful, just incredible pastimes take place at Manasi Ganga. Oh, and then Brahmakund's right next door, but we don't have time for that today. sorry. So at any rate, he got there and he started unpacking his little bag and setting up and started to write. And very shortly after he got set up, now, this type of weather we're having is, I've observed, produced much larger amount of mosquitoes this year. When I go out in the morning to look after Tulsi and Giriraj, the mosquitoes are horrific. I actually have to wear a jacket or I just get chewed alive. So it's very disturbing because, you know, for mere mortals like us, you come back in and you're scratching, and you got to put some witch hazel on it and then put some comfrey on it and still you're scratching. And so Sanatana Goswami was like, oh, no, this isn't going to work. I'm going back to Vrindavan. Uh-uh. So he started to pack his bag back up. Now, Lord Shiva stays in this general area of Govardhan, Chakaleshwar Mahadev, one who is the protector of Govardhan Hill. So in disguise, he came before Sanatana. He said, oh, Sanatana Ji. He said, Baba, where are you going? You just arrived. No, my service to Mahaprabhu is to write books. I came here to peacefully write books. These mosquitoes are just so bad, I can't possibly do it. So I'm going back to my Bhajan Kutir in Vrindavan. No. You just came on an off day. Just wait a bit, and tomorrow there'll be no mosquitoes. I assure you this. I live here. There's no problem. All right, I'll wait a day. Now, as we know from the Bhagavatam, particularly the third canto that we're studying now, there's the different modes of material nature, and the different personalities control the different modes. And Lord Shiva controls the mode of ignorance. The mode of ignorance doesn't just mean those who are ignorant, but it also means those who earn the lower modes of consciousness, such as mosquitoes. So the mosquitoes fall under the jurisdiction of Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva went more or less to the head of the mosquitoes. You can imagine the mosquito king, tiny, tiny little crown on his head, you know, sitting on his teeny, tiny little throne with his teeny servants fanning him, you know. That part might be exaggerated. So Sanatana Goswami spoke to him. He said, now, you leave this area and don't bother this sadhu. He's trying to do very important work. So they left. Lord Shiva's there, Ishtadev, their lord. So they all left. And sure enough, the next day, to this day, if you go to Chakaleshwar Mahadev, to Sanatana Goswami's Bhajan Kuntir, there are no mosquitoes. I've never seen it. I've been there a few times. So at any rate, Sanatana Goswami stayed there, and he took one vow that he would do Govardhan Prakram every day. Now, he wasn't doing the close-up Prakram. There's three Prakram paths. There's the very, very close one where you're almost right on the hill. Many devotees won't go that path. Then there's a second common path that's just outside a little bit, inside from the road. And then there's the third larger path, which goes all the way around. And this is the path that Sanatana Goswami would follow because he didn't want to take any chance of offending Govardhan by stepping on him. Mahaprabhu wouldn't go on Govardhan, so therefore he also would not go. So he's doing like this. He's quite elderly. Now, it's funny. One text I read mentioned that he was 64, 65 years old, and I thought, okay, I still have a lot of energy when I was 64, 65. Of course, I wasn't eating a handful of chickpeas and a dry roti every day either. I have ice cream every night. So at any rate, Krishna came to him one day in his form as a coward boy and said, Baba, what you're doing? Oh, I'm doing my vrata parikram, Govardhan Hill. He said, but you're an old man. You don't have to do this anymore. There are certain age circumstances that overshadow or overrule different types of vrittas. For instance, Prabhupada is famous to have said, and I read it in Janaka Pandit's writings the other day, below 8 and above 8, you do not have to do a codicil or different types of fasting. At any rate, so this coward boy said, Baba, you don't have to do this anymore. You're too old. He said, no, I've taken this vow. I can't give it up. No, but you're an old man. No, but I must do. So Krishna began to play his flute. And as he played the flute, the ground melted. As we know, we've heard this from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Krishna put his footprint there and his stick. I believe there was a cow there also. It might just be the footprint. And then this stone was given to Sanatana. Here, you circumambulate this. This will be as good as circumambulating the entire Govardhan Hill. So for the rest of his days, Sanatana Goswami did this. He circumambulated this shila. It's a pretty good size, not a little one. It's maybe about the size of the top of this desk, you know. He would circumambulate like this. So that Shila is now, of course, in the Ratadamadhar temple, you know, one can see it there. And then he, of course, stayed there until he departed. One day, the local Brajbasis there at Manasi Ganga, they hadn't seen Goswami much of the day. So they went to his Bhajan Kutir. Ah, Goswamiji, Babad, you were there? Ah, knocking on the door, no answer. They went inside and he was in Samadhi. He had departed. So they were all very, very grief-stricken. And as I say, they all shaved their heads. They put him on a palanquin, took him all around Govardhan Hill, and he made his final circumambulation of Govardhan Hill. So these are some stories about Sanatana Goswami. As I mentioned, there's endless others. So many questions, so many instructions, so much philosophy. Sanatana Goswami very, very much mastered all this. But it is time for me to get on to my next service and for us to finish this class this morning. So thank you all very much for giving me this opportunity to speak about Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami is essential for our understanding the process of devotional service. And I highly recommend that you read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Mahaprabhu's instructions to him. If you have Brihat Bhagavatamrita, read that today. Absorb yourself in the pastimes of Sanatana Goswami. And this is the actual observance of Guru Purnima, because he is our Param Guru. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.